welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path, and I'm your host, Mike Allen. Connecticut, you may know, has 169 towns and cities, municipalities they're called, and they've built up over the past nearly 400 years, dating all the way back to the 1600s. So which of those 169 came first, which was the first one settled? Turns out there's still a bit of a question about that 4 centuries later, at least among some folks in Windsor and Wethersfield, which are the two towns with the best claim to the title. Most will tell you it's Windsor, and that's why today our two guests are the executive director and the librarian archivist for the Windsor Historical Society. Doug Shipman is the executive director, and Michelle Tom, the librarian archivist, and they're going to be along momentarily to enlighten us. This week's trivia question: he was at the center of a famous Easter Sunday life-saving miracle a quarter century ago, a story now captured in a current Netflix documentary. Who was he? We'll stick around after the main program for the answer, because then you'll know the topic for next week's show. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. When people need the best quality health care, there's a reason they turn to Yale New Haven Health. In 1826, Yale New Haven Hospital became Connecticut's very first hospital. They were the first hospital in the U.S. to use chemotherapy. Yale New Haven was the first to introduce insulin pumps for diabetic patients. And they introduced the world's first intensive care unit for newborns. For more information about Yale New Haven Health, visit YNHHS.org. That's YNHHS.org. Okay, we're going to try and keep a lot of old history fairly easy to understand on today's episode, because the real purpose is the seemingly simple question that we want an answer to: which was the first town in Connecticut to be settled? Now, Windsor and Wethersfield are the two primary contenders. They had Europeans arriving in 1633 and 1634, respectively. So you might be tempted to say, since Windsor had a presence in 1633, they're number one, let's go home. And many would agree with you. But there is a stickling point, an interesting one, and it's raised by some in Wethersfield, and we'll get to that. Well, 400 years ago, in the 1600s, when all this took place, record-keeping wasn't quite as solid as it is today. And so we rely on the diaries of the people who ran the two major settlements in Massachusetts when the British first came over. The Plymouth Plantation was first, the Massachusetts Bay Colony after that, and it was representatives of those two areas who first came to Connecticut to settle along the Connecticut River. Now, the decade of the 1630s in particular was really kind of turbulent in Connecticut, saw a lot of activity. First of all, that's when all these European settlements took root. Then members of the Pequot Native American tribe attacked the settlement in Wethersfield, and they tried to drive out the white settlers. After that was the ugly and brutal Pequot War, during which the white settlers decimated the indigenous Pequot tribe. Now, just for the record, the British weren't really even the first Europeans in Connecticut. That distinction goes to the Dutch. They had set up a trading post on the Connecticut River near Hartford. They even gave it a name, the House of Good Hope. But they ended up leaving Connecticut and gave the state to the British. So the question of who settled Connecticut first comes down to the folks from Plymouth Plantation, who went to Windsor, and those from the Massachusetts Bay Colony, who went to Wethersfield. Our guests today, both from the Windsor Historical Society, will touch on all of these aspects to help us explain how it all came together. Joining us are Doug Shipman, Executive Director of the Historical Society, and their librarian archivist, Michelle Tom. So the best way to start the story, I think, about Windsor being the first town in Connecticut is to say, well, okay, but you have to go back before the European settlers got here and look at who was actually the first resident of Windsor, and that would be indigenous people who were in the Windsor area and throughout Connecticut, of course. There were what were called, as I understand it, the local river Indians, who had two great rivers to live by, the Connecticut River and the Farmington River, and right there in Windsor where the two of them come together in their confluence. There was access to go inland to do fur trading and hunting and fishing. Tell us a little bit about what we know about the Native Americans who were there in the day.
So Windsor in the 17th century was a lot bigger than it was now. We had the area on both sides, the east and west side of the Connecticut River, and all of these little indigenous tribes were living along the river, and they were just in this very fertile land. So there are all these little tribes living together in between these two much larger tribes. To the west were the Mohawks, to the east were the Pequots. These, what the English called them, the River Indians, started to have to make tributes to both the Mohawk and the Pequots, especially the Pequots, though, because they were at that point already trading regularly with the Dutch. So they were just bigger and more enriched than these smaller tribes. And so they were demanding tributes from the river tribes then.
Now, in 1631, these river tribes decide to take a proactive step to defend themselves and decide to turn to the British. Tell us what we know about that.
That's right. There is a man called Wiginnicutt. It's a little hard to understand because all of what we know about him and his interactions with the English come from the English side. But what we know from the journals of John Winthrop and William Bradford is that Wiginnicutt came to ask the Massachusetts Bay Plantation if they would come and live in this fertile land along the Connecticut River and help protect them from the larger tribes on either side, the Pequot and the Mohawks. So the Massachusetts Bay people were not very interested. So Wiginnicutt went over to the Plymouth people. And at the time, they weren't very interested either, until a couple of years later in 1633, when they learned that the Dutch were actually going to set up a trading post in what became the Hartford area. And suddenly the Plymouth people said, oh, I think we need to get in on that. And finally sent Captain William Holmes and a small group of maybe 10 men along the Connecticut River to sail up above the Hartford trading post so that they could intercept trade coming downriver. They came into a little bit of trouble with the Dutch at Hartford, who threatened to shoot their cannons at them, but the Dutch ended up not doing that. And so they set up a trading post there, the confluence of the Farmington and Connecticut rivers. And they brought with them everything that they needed to have a permanent trading house.
Now, I just want to try and paint a picture for people about what this trip was like. So here they are, they're going up the Connecticut River. They get to what is in modern day today, Brainerd Airport, just south of downtown Hartford. They're going by Brainerd Airport, and the Dutch are threatening to fire on them. For some reason, they don't, which is, you know, a miracle, I'm sure, to the people on board the boat. They go a little further north to where is now, I guess, the Loomis Chafee School, which is just south of where the Farmington River enters into the Connecticut River. And they set up shop there. Now, this is a great location, right? I mean, when you think about all the places along the Connecticut River, fertile land, transportation route, fishing for sustenance, they had everything they needed, didn't they?
The low-lying land between the Farmington and the Connecticut River flooded all the time, and it made the soil incredibly rich, which was one of the reasons that the Plymouth colony wanted to set up here specifically. It was just really great land.
Now, the Dutch obviously were not very happy about this, and they realized that they were getting hopscotched around. And what do we know about that?
They made I'd call it a feint. They marched up to the trading post area. They waved their flags, apparently. And when they were greeted by the English, they turned around and went home. They did not fire on the English. The English did not fire on them, as far as we know. The rest ended peaceably.
Now let's talk for a second, and I don't want to dwell on this, and I'm sure you don't either, about this whole who came first, Windsor or Wethersfield. And I think you have a very healthy approach to it. And I think for years and years there was a little friendly rivalry, but now it seems to be pretty well put into place that Windsor is the first location in Connecticut because of this 1633 William Holmes expedition where they set up the trading post, and they haven't left since. But let's talk for just a second about this character, John Oldham. John Oldham, when I think of Puritans, this is not the first guy that would come to mind. I mean, as I understand it, he was at the Plymouth Plantation, And Miles Standish asked him to do a tour of duty on a guard post, and instead he pulled a knife on him. And, I mean, this is one of the stories about John Oldham that you can read. And then he left the Plymouth plantation, went to Watertown in the Massachusetts Bay Colony Company, stayed there, and then made this foray in 1633 with three others down into what is today Wethersfield.
John Oldham did come with two or three other guys early in September 1633, but he left. He went back to Massachusetts. So I suppose you could say he didn't settle then.
There were the 10 adventurers that settled Wethersfield in 1634. John Oldham, as I understand it, was one of them. These fellows in the early days, Oldham and a couple others, were traders in and around the whole Long Island Sound area and tributaries. And you had to be pretty rough and ready to get out there and mix with indigenous people, Dutch, other English. And Oldham was one of those folks. And he ended up getting killed, as you no doubt know. And it was his death that some allege precipitated the Pequot War, although at the time he was killed, I'm not sure the English back in Massachusetts really cared that much, but later on it became kind of a casus belli for John Mason's later attack on the Pequots. But yeah, Oldham was one of a bunch of characters, and he is associated with the Wethersfield story that came along a little later than Windsor.
There's no doubt that September of 1633, the Windsor Trading Post was established. And within maybe a month or so after that, or 6 months, I'm sorry, or so after that, you know, obviously Wethersfield had 10 people setting up on the east side of Broad Street. And really it got down into a match of, well, who's a settler, who's a trader, what timing was it? So finally, this has now been put to bed, right, in Connecticut?
Well, I don't think the Wethersfield folks or some of our Windsor friends would agree that that particular issue is put to bed. As you alluded to earlier, I think our perspective is really shifting more towards an incorporation of the indigenous story as a precursor to all of this. And as you noted, people like to start the clock at the time of the English arrival, but I think it's more appropriate to turn the clock back a little farther to before that point. And the Europeans were not invited to North America, and it's important to note. And so much of this is perceived now by historians as part of successive waves of this European invasion of North America. In arguing over who's the first town in Connecticut, we're really kind of arguing over who was the first group to push the indigenous people off their land. And sometimes that was violent, sometimes that involved enslavement, and certainly dispossession of native property. You know, the indigenous people had a very different understanding of property ownership than the customary European understanding. And so inviting people to come here may have different meanings culturally than we might attribute to it today. So that 1631 invitation by the River Indians to the English in Massachusetts really got used more as an excuse in successive years for why we were here, rather than, as Michelle noted, at the time, there was a little less interest in coming right away in 1631 until, oh, there's an economic interest and there's this great fertile land available. Of course, one of the other things that doesn't get mentioned too much, there's some speculation that the River Indian tribes were smaller, in part because they'd already been affected by some of the European diseases. And there are some somewhat earlier accounts on the Connecticut River of villages up and down the river that were quite dense. But by the time the English arrived in 1633, they had already been decimated by European diseases, which weakened them to the point where it allowed the Pequots, the Narragansetts, and others to become stronger relative to them and led them to seek a counterbalance, which the English eventually were happy to provide.
When you talk about the Pequot War, downtown Windsor, John Mason, who led that battle, came from Windsor, and there was a stockade fence put into what's, I guess, now the historic district or the main historic district of Windsor to protect against retribution from the indigenous people who were being fought. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was all happened kind of in 1637, and we have descriptions of the dimensions of that palisade, which is the word they used to describe this. It was really a tree trunk post in ground kind of a barrier around a fairly large part of Windsor, which, given the number of people that were here, must have been quite an undertaking to dig a trench and cut down the trees and put them in the ground to create this kind of fortification against what they thought could be successive incursions by the Pequots. And they were alarmed because, as you know, the Pequots raided Wethersfield and killed 9 people and took 2 women hostage and took them back down the river. So the Windsor people thought, well, gee, we could be under threat, therefore we should build a barricade. There's not much evidence of that barricade staying intact after a year or so. We theorize that perhaps the materials were reused, repurposed for other building things. No archaeological work here in this area have ever found any evidence of the palisade, interestingly enough. No post molds in the ground, no evidence of a trench. So the likelihood is that they pulled those pieces of wood out later on, maybe not long after the attack on the Pequot fortifications in the Mystic area, and started reusing it because they realized they were no longer under serious threat.
With your headquarters located where it is, that would have been right inside that stockade. Do I have that right?
That's our understanding, yes. We have a nice little map that shows what was in here and the houses that were here, a meeting house in the center of the green, and our museum is right inside that kind of profile, if you will.
It's interesting to speak to you and get your perspective on what it means to be the number one first town to be settled in Connecticut and the connection to the indigenous people that were displaced in order for that to occur. Having said that, do you feel any special obligation because of your role of guarding the history of the oldest English settlement in the state?
Well, you know, it's a really good question. And when the communities of Wethersfield and Windsor, and I should caveat this by saying I also directed the Wethersfield Historical Society some time ago, this kind of first town claim is very much an element of community pride for communities that in the past were mostly white. That's no longer the case, particularly in Windsor. The white population is less than 50% of the population. And I think there's a much greater interest now in focusing on other things and also to lift and raise up the voices of Indigenous people, many of whom are still here today, that, hey, this first town thing isn't really respectful of the true story, and having the full story told is a little bit more appropriate way to acknowledge your community's history.
That wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. The land where the original settlement was located in Windsor is well preserved, and if you've never been there, it's worth a drive to see the area. They've got houses dating back, a few of them, to the 16 and 1700s. It's really very amazing. I want to thank our guests for today's program, Doug Shipman, Executive Director of the Windsor Historical Society, and the Librarian Archivist for the Historical Society, Michelle Tom. The answer to this week's trivia question, the question was, he was at the center of a famous Easter Sunday life-saving miracle a quarter of a century ago, a story now captured in a current Netflix documentary. Who was he? The answer, Carrie Sorensen and his girlfriend at the time, Ashley Harrison. And the movie of their real-life exploits is called A Wing and a Prayer. Next week on Amazing Tales CT, we'll interview both Carrie and Ashley. Carrie talked a pilot down in a plane. This pilot was flying his family home after the main pilot died of a heart attack in the cockpit. Well, it was an amazing story, and you'll hear it all next week. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe and please stay healthy.